We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
Oh, we're back for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones, Adam. Adam.
Hola.
Hello.
Every now and then I like to keep you on your toes, throwing a little Espanol.
It's good to have like an intercultural flair to the pod.
Yeah. Second straight week with a pod.
Yeah.
Woo! Working hard.
Yeah, let's don't let people get used to it.
Gosh.
We're going to have to take 3 weeks off after this just to make sure nobody expects anything.
A couple things we need to talk about.
Okay.
And then we're going to jump into our interview because we have Hubert Davis. And, of course, Hubert, former Tar Heel player, then a decade plus in the NBA. Now on the bench as an assistant coach for the Tar Heels. And really looking forward to talking to Hubert. It's going to be really good. We could really just open the microphone and say, Hubert.
Yeah.
Basketball. Hubert, Carolina.
Tar Heels.
And it would be tremendous.
I used to love doing that at the Smith Center.
Oh yeah.
He's one of the few who's had that type of like he made a shot cheer.
Well, people and they still do it now. Like in the rare times when like at late night or something when the assistant coaches get announced, he gets the same chant.
Or when he's cutting down a net.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple things before we get to that though. Number one. Not exactly enormous news, but I think worth mentioning. Brackets for the Phil Knight Invitational that Carolina's playing in next year, basketball-wise, have been announced. Tar Heels will play Portland on Thursday, November 23rd. Is that Thanksgiving?
Yes.
So on Thanksgiving, they will play Portland. Then they will face...
Gather around the television, kids.
It's the Tar Heels and the Pilots. Arkansas and Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So the winner of the Carolina-Portland game will face the winner of that. The loser will face the loser of that. Then the other half of Carolina's bracket, Georgetown, new head coach Patrick Ewing, Michigan State, Oregon, and UConn. Both those teams were in Maui last year. And, of course, the Tar Heels played Oregon in the Final Four. So Carolina, Portland, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Georgetown, Michigan State, UConn, Oregon. This is called the victory bracket. In the motion bracket.
The what?
Motion. This bracket has nothing to do with the Tar Heels. It's just part of the same event, but this bracket has nothing to do with the bracket the Tar Heels are in. In fact, I think they're playing in separate gyms. This is Duke and Portland State, Butler and Texas, Florida and Stanford. Of course, Jared Hast, head coach at Stanford. Gonzaga, of course, Tar Heels played them in the championship game. And Ohio State. That's the other side of the bracket. So, actually, a lot of teams that Carolina is familiar with. I mean, Duke, Butler, Texas, they play a lot. Florida, or Stanford with Hass, Oklahoma State, or excuse me, Ohio State, who I think Carolina plays next year, right? In the CBS Sports Classic thing.
In New Orleans.
And Gonzaga. So, anyway.
And Carolina's playing Stanford on the way out to that tournament.
Yes. So, anyway, those are the brackets for that Invitational. It's going to be, that'll be a fun event. A lot of good teams.
You know Arkansas is frothing to get that one. If they could get the matchup with the Tar Heels. But guess what, Arkansas? Even if you win that game, you know what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. The Tar Heels are still going to have the rings, baby.
Yeah, the state senate of Arkansas is making up some ridiculous things right now.
The Northwest Gazette in Arkansas just published 4 editorials about that game.
Huey Dewey or whatever that guy's name was.
That should be an awesome tournament. And Michigan State and Carolina in the same bracket gives me a little hope for my Carolina-Michigan ACC Big Ten Challenge matchup.
Yep.
Which is not official at all, but we have deemed that it should happen.
Official.
In the Jones and Adam Challenge, Tar Heels and Michigan.
Baseball. Tar Heels, number 2 overall national seed. They will host what I thought, and now I do not know the landscape of college baseball like I did several years ago when you and I were covering the game so closely. But I'm going to tell you, I thought it was a pretty challenging bracket that the Tar Heels got. Florida Gulf Coast, a 48-win team, is their 2 seed. Michigan, a very good program, is the 3.
There's my Michigan matchup.
Yeah.
Wrong sport.
And Davidson, a team that Carolina had to go to extra innings against in the regular season, is the 4. Now, I mean, there's a difference between the game in an NCAA tournament and a random midweek game. We've seen that before. I remember when Carolina played. I mean, Carolina got matched up with teams like Winthrop and Coastal Carolina and ECU and teams they play in the midweek where you may have a much more competitive game than when it's cutting time, right?
I mean, you got your weekend pitchers out
right,
there.
Yeah. I mean, so it's a little bit of a different deal. But having said that, I thought this was a challenging bracket for the Tar Heels.
I'm going to tell you something. I think the Tar Heels are winning it all this year.
They're good. I'm telling you, man. And I've watched them a lot more since basketball season ended, obviously, and particularly these last couple of weekends. And I'll go back to something you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago. This team can just hit. There's not an easy out on this team. And I think that's a big deal. And that's why I think the loss to Florida State was a little bit surprising. Not only did Hyatt, who was in for a long time, did he get hit around a little bit, but that they didn't get those big hits that they had gotten so many different times. But here, I'm going to say the same thing about the ACC baseball tournament that I said about the ACC basketball tournament. And actually, I think the baseball tournament's even worse.
Yes.
In that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. And that's a long event with a bunch of just a lot of things going on that makes that to make that event happen. And I'm going to tell you, I know there were extenuating circumstances that moved that thing to Louisville this year. Those crowds were embarrassing. I mean, there were, and I didn't see a lot of the championship game. I heard a little bit of it on the radio because I was out and about that day. But just the games that I watched, I mean, there were games that there would be like 100 people in the stands and games involving good teams.
The dumbest thing about that entire event is that in order to play that event, you didn't play a Carolina-Louisville series, which would have had more people at those 3 Carolina-Louisville games than at the entire ACC tournament put together.
Yeah. Our whole – so Adam and I – and it's a little different now because there's more teams in the league. It used to be that you only missed 1 team in the league. And so our argument then was, why not just get rid of the tournament?
Like volleyball.
Right. Have everybody play everybody in a weekend series and then determine your champion that way. Now there's more teams now, but I still think it makes more sense. And I guess you couldn't do a true round robin because that'd be like almost every weekend series you had. But there's just...
So what? So you lose a weekend series against...
I know.
Some other random team?
It just... I don't know, man. It just that event, and they've tried so many different formats, and just none of them stick because none of it makes sense. I mean, so now there's what, 4 3 team pods, and you play 2 games, and then you play a single elimination semifinal and finals. I'm not saying that's any worse or better than any of the other ones. There's none of them really work.
the only format for this event that would be a true championship is double elimination.
Right.
Which no one is willing to do.
Because it takes
because
forever.
The event matters so little.
Well, and there's a billion teams now that would be involved. I mean, it would just take forever.
When given the choice between, do you want to use your real pitching and try to win the ACC tournament in a double elimination format, or do you want to save your pitching for the NCAA tournament? Every ACC coach said, we don't want to waste our pitching on the ACC tournament.
And we're not saying that the teams aren't trying to win and that Florida State wasn't excited. I mean, yes, of course all those things were true and the Tar Heels were bummed they lost the game. But it just, in the grand scheme of things, there's got to be a better way. Yeah. There has to be to determine your champion. I mean, the only teams it mattered for, in hindsight, there was one game that whole event that mattered, and that was Carolina-Miami.
Yep.
Because if Miami won that game, they would go to the NCAA tournament. And since they didn't, they didn't. Now, they didn't know it at the time, but in hindsight, that's what it came to. Maybe they did. But in hindsight, that's what that whole event boiled down to, was that one game.
Do you really believe that if Miami played Michigan, Michigan would win 2 out of 3?
Right, no.
I don't.
No, me neither. And I don't even know that much about – I know Miami's not as good this year as they have been, but still. Anyway.
So, I think the Tar Heels are going to win it this year.
Got a good old baseball ran in. Hadn't had one of those in a while. What else you got? What else is going on?
Well, this is something important. Did you see Darren Revelle's tweet?
No.
About what you need – look it up. Look up Darren Revelle's Twitter feed.
All right.
And he had a tweet about the most misspelled words in each state.
Oh, yes, I did see this because somebody sent it to me.
I think you might have had something to do with this.
So the most misspelled word in the state of North Carolina is angel.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yes.
Because that's not a word that you would misspell.
Unless.
Right.
I'm being serious. Like, and the words in nearby states, like I think South Carolina was Chihuahua.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Like, that's a hard word to spell.
I have a couple things. First of all, how is it that in Mississippi, the most misspelled word is nanny? That doesn't even make sense. West to east. It's Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so that's Mississippi. Okay, here's another one. Gray.
See, I get that one.
Aren't both forms of gray acceptable?
I think so.
Yeah, so
I use them interchangeably.
How can one be misspelled?
I think it's like what people Googled.
Oh, and here's supercalifragilistic. How can that even count?
Yeah, which state was that? They're just showing off.
West Virginia, and then one of the ones up there in the Northeast. I think it's Massachusetts.
Yeah, that sounds like something Massachusetts would Google.
Now, see, like some of these don't. Some of these I can accept. Like, okay, okay, pneumonia. Okay,
yeah, that's a tough one.
Maybe I can understand that.
That's a tough one.
But like, disease, sense, surprise. That's disappointing. Special. People, you can't spell special?
What state is that? This is like a geography test. Just say something. No one knows.
Well, hold on. I'm trying to see because it's in the ones where it's like, you know how in the Northeast you got to put everybody on the ocean and then have the lines that point to the states? I think it's, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
I think it's.
I didn't at first, but now I do.
I think it's Maryland. I think it's pointing to Maryland. 90. Now, 90 and 40. Sometimes I'm like, if I'm writing a check, because I do still write checks every now and then.
Sure. At the grocery store, while everybody else in line is mad at you.
Be like, which of these, if there's one button for credit, one for debit, and one, where's the check button?
I'd also like to get cash back. I realize it's 11:35 p.m.
But every now and then, like, I'll get in my own head on 90 and 40, and I'm like, wait a second. Is there a U in 40? And, like, I have to think about it. Every now and then. Now that one I can accept. Beautiful. Vacuum. Okay. This might be the greatest one. The most misspelled word in Wisconsin is Wisconsin.
Mississippi's like, dude, even we know how to spell our own state. Come on, Russell Wilson. Don't you know better than that?
That'll teach you to play slow basketball.
Yeah, that's right. Coach Williams is laughing at you, Bo Ryan.
Sauerkraut. Now that one I can accept.
Yeah.
Good job, Pennsylvania. Hmm. Angel. Yeah, I wonder why it's Angel. That's weird.
That has to be it. How else would you spell it?
I don't know.
Like, why are you having to Google that if not for the pod?
Is it Angel Angle? Is this like the confusion? I don't know.
We big geometry fans in North Carolina?
I don't know.
That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that, was that you had influenced a map of America.
As it should be. A couple of tweets that I wanted to get to. A lot of people have talked to me about Lost. Okay, remember I said that I was watching Lost, and should I stay with Lost or get away from Lost? And the overwhelming response has been stick with it. Mm. So I'm going to stick with it. I've had one or two that say no, move along, but most of them have been stick with it.
Have you gotten deeper into it?
I haven't watched a ton since we last met. I've watched maybe two or three episodes since we last met. But I'm that's fine. I've got plenty of time.
I don't understand, and it's because I'm old, how people sit down and watch like 14 episodes of a show in a row.
Oh, I could do it. I could do it. Well, you have to have nothing to do. I mean, it has to be in a time where you have nothing going on.
No, I would fall asleep even if I had nothing going on.
See, no, I could do it. I could do it. It's you get wrapped up in it. It's like the ball starts rolling and it starts going downhill. And then, you know, you're like, oh, cool. And then you're like, get one that has a cliffhanger. And you're like, oh, well, I mean, the next one's only 42 minutes. I can watch another one for 42 minutes. And then you get a little farther. And then it's like, oh, or further. And then it's like, whoa, blah, blah, blah. And so then all of a sudden you don't know. And it's been like 10 hours and you've watched like 15 shows.
Wouldn't your wife yell at you before that occurred?
I'm telling you, it has to be at a time where you have nothing going on. That's part
and like
of the key.
No wife?
Yeah. That it's got to be something like that. Where, I mean, like a 17-year-old, you could see that happening. Or a 20-year-old.
Yeah, but as I said, that's not me.
Yeah, I know. You're too old.
I go get sleepy.
So I'm going to stick with Lost. Okay. I will give you periodic updates. But I've enjoyed it. It's and I will also say this for the show. I think it would be really hard to watch it back when it came out, because it would be so confusing. Because now, like, I can watch an episode and then I go and like read on Wikipedia, like I go to the Lost Wikipedia and I read the like the recap of the episode to make sure I understood everything and all that kind of stuff. So I enjoy watching it this way. So I'm going to keep plugging forward. We did have a tweet about, I'm trying to find it so I can say who it was from. Adam Williams, recent joining to the podcast, both on Twitter and I think overall. He said, any thoughts on Carolina's response to the NCAA most recent notice of allegations? I will mention this because we mentioned it a couple of months ago, but I'll mention it again. We are not going to speak on this topic simply because Bubba Cunningham, the athletic director at UNC, has made a very clear statement to everyone within the athletic department or around the athletic department that he does not want people speaking publicly about this and that he's going to be the voice of it publicly. He and Coach Williams, I mean, and obviously Bubba Cunningham is the athletic director, and that's his call. So we are not going to talk about that on the podcast, although I'm sure we'd love to, and Adam would like to break it down and get into all the legalese. He did spend like half of one semester in law school, so Adam be all over it.
I was there for at least a week and a half.
But so we're going to leave that alone. But obviously that's out there and it's there.
I'll tell you something Bubba Cunningham talked about when he was on the pod that I just saw firsthand just today.
Seats in Keenan?
No.
Oh.
I drove by Fetzer Field.
Oh.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's already a bunch of construction going down.
Goodbye trees.
Yeah.
And all other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they did not waste it. They said it was going to start, and it did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a big-time construction zone there in the middle of campus. They're all over it. That's good.
Well,
get it moving.
And so just factor that in if you're coming to the baseball games this weekend, that traffic may be a little different than what you're used to it being.
Anything else before we move on to our Hubert Davis interview?
I feel like I had thought of something, but now I've forgotten. Oh, well, I was going to ask people because – you asked him about Lost. So I'm reading this book, and it doesn't have pictures. So I need some advice. It's called Natchez Burning. It's by this dude named Greg. I think he pronounced his last name Iles. It's I-L-E-S. But it's really long. It's like 800 pages long, but it's really good.
Natchez Burning?
Yeah.
What's it about?
Natchez, Mississippi.
Oh.
But it's like fiction. And it's about kind of, there's some civil rights stuff in there, but there's like some mystery components. So it's the first of three in a trilogy. But apparently all three of them are as long as this first one. So what I'm wondering is, should I keep going? Do I want to read the rest of these? Because apparently this was a popular book like 2 or 3 years ago, but I just totally missed it.
Sure.
So if anybody read it and then read the next two, should I keep going? And if it helps for your frame of reference, I like this first one. I'm only about 500 pages in. So I still got a lot more left than I would like to imagine. But if I ever finish, possibly next summer, should I keep going or not? Because 800 pages, that's a big commitment.
By the way, totally nailed the geography down there. West to east, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia.
That's what made me think of it, because you were talking about Mississippi.
I got it. Every now and then, Mississippi, Alabama, kind of get them switched.
We all know that Georgia is the closest to North
Carolina. Oh, yeah. I know which one's Georgia. Yeah. But sometimes Alabama, Mississippi, I get confused which one's which.
Yeah.
It's Mississippi, Alabama. Ma. See, now I'll never forget.
We've been to Alabama for a game. Well, Mississippi for the NIT.
Starkville, baby.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to Hubert Davis. This is going to be good. Hubert Davis is awesome. Let's get to our interview with former Tar Heel assistant coach Hubert Davis. Man, we are excited to have joining us, gosh, right in the middle of the luxurious Pod World headquarters, former Tar Heel and current Tar Heel assistant coach Hubert Davis. Hubert, what is up?
Working on my tan. That's what's working on.
Are you working on the beard? I like the beard look.
Yeah, that's my summer look, and I'll shave it as soon as we go out recruiting in July. I know Coach Smith and Coach Guthers didn't like facial hair, so this is my time to let it grow, and then as soon as I leave campus representing the basketball program, then I'll be clean shaven.
You have like a month to rebel.
I do. Get some, Coach Smith.
I'll show you.
I'm 47 years old. I can do what I want to do now.
It's been, about 6 weeks, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
Since the national championship. Just what's been going on in your life? Kind of what's it been like now as a member of a national championship team and coaching staff?
Well, I mean, it's been great. I think right now it's starting to kind of set in what we achieved and what we were able to accomplish this year. And I know that kind of sounds weird saying that you win a national championship and 6 weeks out. It still hasn't felt like you actually won it. But there hasn't been a day that's gone by that I haven't looked at either the championship game, the game against Oregon, the game against Kentucky, or the game against Arkansas. And so it's being around the guys now, doing individual workouts and being on the court and seeing former players come back like Tyler Hansbrough and Marcus Page has been back. It's just an unbelievable feeling, and you just think about what we went through, what we've accomplished, and I'm just so proud of Coach Williams and the coaching staff and all the players that put together an unbelievable season.
When did you realize that this team was good enough to do it?
Well, I mean, just like Coach, we felt like this was a team that could win a national championship at the beginning of the year. But so many things have to happen. Guys have to stay healthy. The ball has to bounce the right way. We have to continue to improve, and I think for me it really set in after the Arkansas game, because one of the things that Coach has always said that he's never seen a team win a championship that wasn't good on the defensive end, and I just felt like defensively we were all over the place, and I felt like that last 5 minutes against Arkansas, and for whatever reason, probably desperation or understanding that, this might end right now, guys bought into the defensive end. And I just always felt like if we played with effort and played on the defensive end, it didn't care how we shot, we were going to beat anybody in the country. And from that point on, I felt pretty good about our chances cutting down the nets.
You said you've watched one of those four games almost every day.
Yeah.
When you're watching it at this point, do you watch it as a coach? Like, are you looking at things?
No, I'm looking at it as a fan. Oh, I'm just enjoying it. because you don't get to on the bench. You know, you don't. You're looking at it as a coach. You're looking at strategy. You're looking at players. You're looking at the next move, the mistakes that you made. What can you change? And so, to look at it as a fan, that's something that you don't get the luxury of doing as a coach sitting right there on the bench. And so, when I'm watching these games every day, I'm looking at it as a fan, and it's the great part about it is I know the outcome, and so it makes it even a lot better.
Do you get nervous when you're watching? I mean,
I do. You know, I do get nervous, but also get amazed. You know, when I'm watching Kentucky and we're up by 7 with less than a minute to go, I'm like, how is this a close game? I was like, what did we do? What happened? You know, I look at the Oregon game, and I'm like, gosh, we just make some free throws. We would have won by 12, 15 points. Like, mm-hmm. What happened here? And so you look at it from that standpoint, but I love looking at these films because I know you guys know the story, and I've told Coach, you know, every year since the 91 Final Four, I've watched that game and that we lost to Kansas, that Coach Williams was coaching Kansas at the time, and every year that I've watched it since that time. And so it's nice to be able to watch something and the outcome be a lot better.
Why do that to yourself? Why watch the 91 game every year?
It meant so much. You know, it wasn't the 91 game, and this year it wasn't just about beating Gonzaga. It was just – and I've talked with you, Adam. There was a lot going into this year. There was, yes, we beat Gonzaga. Us losing against Villanova the previous year, the 91 losing in the Final Four, thinking about great players like Kenny Smith and Rick Fox and King Rice and Pete Chilcutt and guys that were great players here at Carolina and never won a national championship. Thinking about when I was in the NBA and we lost in Game 7, we're up 3-2 and lost 6-7 in Houston against the Houston Rockets. And so many things just go through my mind about being close and not having a chance to win it. And so I don't know why I put myself through that. Maybe I'm hoping that the outcome would change. I don't know. But I think it also meant that I really wanted to experience – in 91, what I experienced this year in 2017. You know, a place that you've always loved and dreamed of being a part of and playing for Coach Smith and Coach Guthridge and putting on that uniform. I couldn't think of anything better than winning a national championship here at North Carolina.
Talking to Hubert Davis here on the Carolina Insider. When Carolina won it in 93, that was the year after you left your senior year's 92. I just be interested in kind of your emotions from afar when they achieved what you came so close to achieving in 91. And do you think those emotions or similar emotions may have gone through a guy like Marcus Paige or Bryce Johnson, who was so close late in their career and then saw some of their teammates get it done at a later time?
I do. And funny, Marcus and I had a conversation about that yesterday right after pickup. And I told him, I said, Marcus, I wanted to let you know that we had no chance this year of winning a national championship without you and what you put into this program the last 4 years. I said, your group, Bryce, you, and Joel, changed the direction of this program. And because of your character, because of your leadership, because of your abilities, you put North Carolina on a different path. And I said that there is no way that we would have had a chance to get back to the Final Four, get to the national championship game and win it without you. And I said, Marcus, I hope that you understand that you are just as much of a piece of us winning a national championship as Joel, as Kennedy, as Isaiah. And I said, I really believe that. There's no chance without your leadership. And he said, thank you, and he felt the same way that I felt in 93. You are so happy. I remember being so happy for Coach Smith and Coach Guthridge and Eric Montross and George Lynch and Scott Cherry and Dante Calabria, all those guys. I was so happy for Donald Williams. But you're also were so sad. I remember being – I was watching the game with my teammates with the New York Knicks. We were getting ready to play the Atlanta Hawks the next day. So we're sitting in a restaurant, and I was watching the game, and I had mixed emotions. Of course, I wanted North Carolina to win, but on the other end, I was selfishly wishing that I was there and being a part of it. And that's the same way that Marcus expressed that he felt watching the national championship game this year.
You had the scouts on Kentucky this year. As you were getting ready for that second meeting with Kentucky, how did you try
I was ready for them. And I wanted to play them so badly. I did.
You and Theo were the two who wanted them, I think.
We all did. One, Kentucky's a great team. And we wanted an opportunity to play one of the best in the country. The second reason is we felt like we didn't play well at all defensively, and we also let a game get away that we felt like we should have won in Las Vegas. And so we really wanted that matchup. And the two guys that I thought – I mean, everybody played well. Luke was terrific, Kennedy, everybody had a huge part in us winning that game. But to me, the two guys that I thought were the best were Justin and Theo, because Theo wasn't in that first game against Vegas. And his defense on De'Aaron Fox was fantastic. So with Theo, he's 2 to 3 inches taller. He could give De'Aaron Fox a couple more steps because Fox is not great outside shooter. And so I thought he did a great job of containing him. But Justin Jackson, his defense on Malik Monk was just unbelievable. And one of the things that we kept saying to them over and over again is Malik Monk had 47 points. He had 0 rebounds. 0 assists and 0 fouls. And we said the guy playing against North Carolina is going to take off on the defensive end and just play on the offensive end. And I was like, that should never, never happen. And I think it really resonated with the guys, and everybody stepped up, but those two were absolutely fantastic.
You've kind of in different portions here, talking about a scout, talking about going out and recruiting, talking about watching as a coach from the bench. You've now been in this a couple of years on the bench and as a coach. How do you feel like you've improved, and do you kind of feel more like a coach now than you did, say, 3, 4, 5 years ago when you got here?
I do. I think a couple things. I think one, just being having a front row seat to be able to see what Coach Williams does on a day-to-day basis. I mean, you're around Coach Smith and Coach Guthers the time that you're here, but you don't really understand what they put in on a day-to-day basis just to give you a chance to be successful out there on the floor. And so for the last 5 years, every day working for the greatest coach that I've ever been around in Coach Williams, that only makes you a better coach. And then the second reason is, Coach Williams gives me an opportunity to be the head coach for the junior varsity team. And I know there's a huge difference in making decisions as a head coach for the varsity team as opposed to the JV team, but there is a difference. The difference between an assistant and a head coach is one makes, decisions and one makes suggestions. And even though it's on a lower scale, JV allows me to make decisions and gives me just a small glimpse on the decisions that Coach Williams has to make on a day-to-day basis.
Have you tried anything with the JV team that you thought, I think this is a great idea, and then you did it and you're like, oh, man, no wonder people don't do that. That was a terrible idea.
I haven't tried anything like that, but you know what I am going to try this year? I'm going to try a matchup zone. I'm going to try a matchup zone because Oregon's matchup zone was the best matchup zone I've ever seen. Louisville does it as well. But in the middle of their possession, they switch into a man-to-man, and it's still very good. And I think in large part because they always have athletes and they always have length, so they can switch everything. But Oregon's matchup zone, I still don't understand. The way that they switched, the way that they communicated, it was just different, and it really caused us a lot of problems. And I think one of the keys for us winning that game was us playing against Louisville earlier in the year. We had trouble scoring against them in the first half, and the reason being is we felt like they were in a zone, so we were running zone plays. And then at halftime, Coach Robbins said, let's just run man plays. Let's treat it as a man. And so we ran our man offense. And so that gave us spacing and ability to be able to score more efficiently. And so that's what we did against Oregon. And that allowed us to get some rhythm and get some good shots for Justin and Kennedy and offensive rebounding. And I thought that was a huge key to the game. But I'm going to try that matchup zone. I don't know how I'm going to configure it, but I've been talking to a number of people, and we're going to try some stuff next year.
Got pretty much the same length on the JV team that Louisville and Oregon.
Oh, definitely we do. Definitely we do. We've got Jordan Bell. We've got a JV version of Ennis and Brooks and Tyler Dorsey. We'd be undefeated if we had those guys.
It'd John nice. Hargrave. Coming for you.
Dance Community College.
You mentioned Coach Williams and just having a front row seat to kind of see what he does. What, now that you have that front row seat, what is it, in your opinion, that has made him so successful for so long?
There's not just one thing. I mean, I think it all comes down to the foundation of his love and appreciation for this university and the basketball program and how much he loves the kids. Every decision that he makes, whether it's on the court or off the court, is filtered through what is in the best interest of the player and the player's family. It just does. And one of the things, I mean, he's a great X and O's coach, but he has a great feel for the game. I mean, he just has a great understanding of when to put guys in, when to make changes. I know a lot of people talk about his timeouts, but he has a great understanding of when to call timeout and when not to call timeout. I mean, just case in point, he puts in Stillman White during a Kentucky game out of the blue, and Stillman gave us some big minutes in that game. And so he just has a great feel for individuals and the game and how to move pieces around. And but there's not just one thing. I really do believe that. Everything is filtered through how much he loves this university and these kids.
You know basketball, of course, when you took the job in 2012, everybody knew you knew the game. Yeah. But you can't really simulate recruiting. What have you learned about recruiting and what that's like as we sit here in the year of 2017?
In terms of recruiting, I've learned that tradition doesn't mean that much to recruits anymore. I just don't think that a majority of the kids – think about just running out of that tunnel, putting on that uniform, doing the same things as Tommy Lagarde and Rich Yonaker and Walter Davis and John Kuster. I don't think they know the history of Carolina. I mean, last year we were in New Orleans playing Tulane, and we didn't play in the Superdome, but we were going to our shoot-around, and Coach Williams asked the team, what two famous games in North Carolina history have been played at the Superdome? Or he didn't even say North Carolina. What two famous games have been played at the Superdome? And none of our guys knew it. And only one person raised their hand. It was Joel Barrett. And he said, isn't that where Alabama won the national championship in football? That's it. And so they had no idea that two of our national championships were won there. They had no idea that Coach Williams coached his last game at Kansas there. They had no idea. And they're great kids. But they don't know the history, and recruits don't know either. You know, most of the time, recruits are picking the best college that better serves them to get them to where they want to go. And that's sad to me. I really do. I think they miss this place. I think they miss what this place offers. And a lot of times you get kids that don't want to put both feet in and don't want to unpack their bags wherever they go. And so that I've learned that, and that kind of hurts, because I think this place is beautiful, and I think the history of this place is beautiful as well. And so it's our job to educate them when they get here, but I don't think kids care about the history and tradition. I think kids care about being on television, winning national championships, and this place is going to give me an opportunity to go into the NBA.
How do you find that balance? Because obviously you want good players.
Yeah.
So how do you find that balance to find a Joel Berry or a Bryce Johnson, a guy who has the talent but also is a guy who you feel like can fit in with what you want to do here at at Carolina, even if they're not historians like yeah. you're saying.
Well, I I've also learned that I'm weird. You know, and I was all about the history, and I grew up differently than most people. Most people didn't have an uncle that played here, and so me being here since the age of four, not many people have had the experiences that I've had. So I understand that, but I think when the recruits come in or when players get here and they see all the former players coming back, especially during camp time, they see the relationships with other players from different eras. I think they understand that. So, like, maybe Joel didn't know the history of North Carolina basketball and the New Orleans Superdome, but I tell you right now, he knows about Carolina basketball. He knows about the brotherhood. He knows about the love, the family, the appreciation, what makes this program so great over the last number of years.
All right, we let people know that you are going to be on the podcast.
Yeah.
So we got some questions.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can pull some of them up here. Because okay. Adam and I, we need help badly most of the time.
No, not at all.
this is when you get the good questions.
Okay, great.
Our friend Joby West says, always love hearing former players discuss what Carolina means to them. And also, if you could talk about the difference between analyzing a game when you were doing television work versus kind of scouting an opponent and scouting a game and getting ready for a game as a coach.
Well, scouting in terms is there really not much difference. I mean, in terms of scouting, I'm scouting our opponent. When I was working with ESPN, I would be scouting both opponents. And then other differences on television, one of the things that I really wanted to do and was very hard is I didn't want to come across as being a North Carolina fan. I wanted whoever was listening to me to think that I was giving an upfront and honest opinion of whatever team. And I didn't want to seem that I was biased towards North Carolina in any way. Being in a coach right now, I can cheer for him. So I don't really care what anybody else thinks. But that would be the two differences of being an assistant coach and working for ESPN.
In your opinion, best player you went against in college, best player you went against in the NBA, and was there a player you wanted to be growing up? So that's a three-part question.
Wow.
Best player, best opponent in college, best opponent in the NBA, and who did you grow up when you were in the driveway shooting? Who did you pretend to be?
Best opponent that I played against in college was Mark Macon.
That's right, from Temple, yeah.
From Temple.
He
was amazing. He was unbelievable. And actually, on my recruiting visit, North Carolina, which was interesting, they played a back-to-back home game Saturday and Sunday. They mm-hmm. played Maryland, and the next day they played Temple here. And yep. Temple was number one team in the country. So North Carolina beat Maryland on Saturday. Next day they had to play Temple at home, and Temple just crushed them.
Yep.
And Mark Macon was a freshman. And I remember sitting in the stands going, I don't know if I can play Division I college basketball because that guy's only 1 year older than me, and he's killing North Carolina. He was fantastic. And so then we ended up playing them in the Final Eight game my junior year that allowed us to go to the Final Four in 91. But he's was the best player that I played against in college. In the pros, Michael Jordan. And the great part for me is I had an opportunity to play with him 1 year with the Washington Wizards. So that was unbelievable. And then the player that I always wanted to be growing up was my uncle. I just always wanted to go to North Carolina. I wanted to play like him, and even though that I was very far short of becoming a player as Uncle Walt was, but I'd always wanted to be Uncle Walt out there on the floor.
Had a couple people ask, Hubert, and we're talking to Hubert Davis here, about some of your favorite moments from your time with College Game Day at ESPN and just kind of what that was like being a part of what has, of course, been a very successful show.
Yeah, the best parts for me about ESPN, I never enjoyed being on television. I never enjoyed sitting behind a desk and analyzing teams and players. The highlight for me with ESPN was, one, the people that I worked with. I just didn't work with Jay Billis and Reese Davis and Digger Phelps. All three of those guys were my friends. And so the people that I worked with on a day-to-day basis were absolutely fantastic. The other part that I loved about my job was being able to go to practices and shoot arounds and games. Having an opportunity to sit down with Coach Izzo and Coach Pitino and Coach K and during practice and talk philosophy and talk about basketball with them. That was the fun part for me. I had no desire. It wasn't to be on TV, to be recognized, to be in front of a desk, but just having an opportunity to go to different universities, different programs, see different traditions, different practices was really huge for me. You know, going to North Carolina, obviously I believe North Carolina is the right way, but my time at ESPN showed me that it can be done other ways and you can still be successful.
Carolina James sent this one in, wants to know, do you want to be a head coach someday? And is that something that has gone through your mind?
It's never gone through my mind. And I've never been that way. I've never, you know, I came to Carolina, I never had goals like I wanted to start at this time. I wanted to average this many points. I wanted to get to the NBA. When I got to the NBA, I didn't say, okay, I wanted to achieve this. When I was with the ESPN, when I first started, never said my goal is to get on College game day. And as an assistant coach here, I've just never thought about, you know, at some point my goal is to be a head coach. I've never thought about that. I've always believed in wherever you're at, try to be the best that you can be. And then every day put together the preparation and the process, and wherever that ends up, it ends up. And so I've never been like a forward thinker, planner like that. I think the only like forward-thinking goal that I ever had was that I wanted to come to the University of North Carolina. I wanted to play here. I wanted to go to school here. I wanted to graduate here. But in terms of goals and achievements, once I got there, I've just never been a person that does that. I just, wherever I'm at, I want to be the best that I can be. And so right now, I just want to be the best assistant coach for Coach Williams I can be right now.
I'd be interested, of course, C.B. McGrath, head coach now at UNC Wilmington. So you guys, a little bit of a shakeup on the assistant coaching group. I'd just be interested in how you feel like your role may change with CB now gone. And do you think you have to take on something maybe that CB provided to your group?
CB's a little unique. I don't know if I can. I don't think anybody can replace him. And we're going to miss CB so much. And I am. I'm really happy for him and his family. I think this is a move that he's wanted to make for a while, and I know that the UNCW job was a job that something that he wanted, and I'm so thankful that he got an opportunity. He's going to do a great job there, and we're going to miss him every day. I don't think my role in terms of me, I don't think my role is going to change at all. I mean, I'm still coaching the JV. One of the great things about Coach Williams is he allows us, all of his assistants, to do everything. So there isn't this guy you do this guy you do that. What Coach Williams wants is for us to be involved in everything. So if we ever desire to be a head coach, we know what we're doing. And so a huge reason why CB and Coach Hass have gotten the opportunity and are going to be successful, and Coach Hass has already been successful, is because Coach Williams has allowed them to do everything as an assistant to prepare them for whenever they wanted to be a head coach.
Talking to Hubert Davis here on the Carolina Insider podcast. Hubert, you mentioned Coach Smith a couple of times. I'd just be interested in kind of your thoughts on Coach, what he meant to you. Maybe if you think about him any differently now or think about him more since his passing, anything like that, and just the impact that he's had on you.
Well, he gave me a chance. You know, I think about everything significant in my life ties back to Chapel Hill, ties back to UNC. I mean, this is where I went to college. This is where I graduated. This is where I became a Christian. This is where I fell in love with my wife. This is where we got married. This is where I bought my first house. This is where my wife and I, after I retired in 2004, decided to raise our children. And it all leads back to Coach Smith giving me an opportunity and a chance when he didn't have to. You know, when he came into my home and told me that he didn't think I was good enough to come to Carolina, he very easily could have said, I'm not going to offer you a scholarship. But 2 days later, he gave me that opportunity and gave me that chance. And I always think about that. I always think about that JV tryouts, always think about that in, you know, how I relate to the kids, giving them an opportunity and giving them a chance. And that's what I think about with Coach Smith, giving me a chance.
Before we let you go, of course, we can't let you leave without looking a little bit ahead to next season and what you guys have coming up. Obviously,
it's only been 6 weeks.
Yeah, no, that's gone, Huber. Now we have to look forward.
Okay. Stop talking about old times.
Yeah. Obviously, this will be a different team. You guys lose a couple of senior starters, Justin Jackson, Tony Bradley, both into the NBA as well. Do you have any feel for next year at this point? Do you have any opinions on next year? Do you have any level of excitement for next year? Just kind of where are you with the 2017-18 Tar Heels?
I am excited. I'm excited about this team. I'm excited about having five freshmen come in and getting to know them and trying to get them to understand what Carolina basketball is all about. I'm excited for the senior leadership of Joel and Theo. I'm excited for Kenny coming back, having a chance to be healthy and coming back. I'm excited about guys like Brandon Robinson having a chance to play more minutes next year and seeing what he can do. I'm excited to see what Luke is going to do. You know, he's made such a jump from his freshman to sophomore year, and the jump that he's going to make from his sophomore to junior year. So I am excited. But, you know, in terms of what our team is going to look like, I have no idea, because we do have five freshmen.
Yeah.
And we have no idea what it's going to look like. And I think that's the fun part. The fun part is every day just trying to figure out how can we be the best team that we can possibly be. And so that's going to be fun. And it's the first time that for me going through the year as a defending national champion. I think that's pretty neat. And so I'm really excited about that.
I could sit here and talk with Hubert Davis all day because he's got like – 40 years of perspective on Tar Heel basketball, because not because you're old.
I am.
Because
I am.
his uncle's Walter Davis.
I am.
He played for Dean Smith, and now he's coaching with Roy Williams. I mean, who else are you going to talk to who's going to have that kind of perspective?
Yeah.
When you were talking about Coach Smith, I wonder if there was any time you were sitting in his office or you're on the sideline during a game or a practice or something, and you remember thinking, oh, this guy's on a different level than the other people who were doing this.
I felt that all the time. There just wasn't one time. I felt that all the time. I really did. He, you know, what he has meant to me and to all the players that he has coached, it's beyond X's and O's. It's beyond basketball. It just really is. I mean, I know it's hard to understand that if you haven't experienced it, but my entire life, the 4 years that I was here and the time that I've known Coach Smith, I mean, he's been an example. He's been a teacher, not only by word, by the way that he walks since I've known him. And to have that as a coach on and off the floor, somebody that you can look up to and copy and emulate, I just think it's just unbelievable. And Coach Guthers was the same way. The whole coaching staff, Coach Ford, Coach Hanners, Coach Hart, Coach Randy Wheel, all of them, they were father figures to all of us on and off the floor.
Coach Smith gave each letterman a check.
He did.
In his will, what did you do with yours?
You saw it's in my office. I won't cash it. And I told Mrs. Smith, I know you can't balance your checkbook, but I just can't. You know, I don't want to use that money. And it's as soon as I walk into my office, it's right there. And it, I don't need to be reminded, but it, when people come into the office, they always ask, it gives me an opportunity to brag on Coach Smith. And so they, well, why do you have this check framed in your office? And I tell them why it's there, why I haven't cashed it, and what it means to me. And so I will never cash it. And Mrs. Smith didn't get mad at me, so it's good.
Every month she's in there, gosh, why is this $200 still right here?
Who is the guy?
And she starts pounding her fist on her. Is that Davis?
Michael Jordan, yes, deposit it is. Hubert Davis.
Michael deposit.
Hubert Davis. I want to know, how did you get your hair to do that thing when you were playing at Carolina?
Where that
you
was had sweet.
Like, you don't
where you had like
know.
The back was kind of shaved, then you did the front thing. What was that? How'd you do that?
Well, I got it from J.R. Reed.
Oh, see, that's your first mistake.
Exactly.
That was the last advice he took from J.R. Reed.
On my recruiting visit, he had that ski slope fade, and I was like, man, that is really cool. And so I got the idea from J.R. I took it to a different level. What I used to do every morning which was horrible, is I used to get a blow dryer and like a hot iron like comb to kind of like straighten the front part of it out every morning, and then I would put my fingers through it once my hair got soft to make it like a cloud. And so my roommate Justin Carralt every morning was like, "What are you doing?" And I'm saying, "I'm trying to make a ski slope fade with like a cloud at the top." And I would put my fingers through it, my hair would get soft, and I would just make it perfect every time. But I would do that every morning before I went to my 8 o'clock class.
I'm so glad that you and your wife have such a good relationship, because I'd really be worried about it right now if yeah. she did not know that.
No,
already.
She knew that. We met in high school, so she know how she knows how weird I am. But I did that every day. I'm surprised that I have hair right in the front, because I mean I can't believe that I didn't burn my hair or burn my scalp. But I did that every morning to try to get that ski slope fade.
When you were in the Smith Center and you were knocking down another one of those sweet threes, and the crowd would go huge. How long did it take you to realize they were not booing you?
My sophomore year. I really did think they were booing me. And I didn't understand why they would boo somebody that made a shot. But I did think that they were booing me. And my sophomore year, I realized that they were screaming Hugh. And I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. But that first year, I was clueless. I was like, why are they booing me?
I mean, like, don't you see this hair?
My hair looks like a cloud.
I didn't do that my freshman year.
Oh, that's right.
Chill. I didn't do that. I didn't do that my freshman year. That came like late sophomore year, but it was in full effect junior year. That's what took us to the Final Four in 91.
That was the step,
it took off.
Step forward.
I
want to ask you one non-Carolina question real
yeah.
quick. You were involved, and you mentioned this, on some really good Knicks teams in yeah. kind of the early or mid-1990s time period.
Yeah.
What was being a part of that group? And that's such a group that has kind of that, not bad boy Pistons-wise, but, you know, just kind of rough and tumble and very physical group. And those were some rough and tumble days in the NBA. I'd just be interested in kind of your memories of being a part of that group with Oakley and Ewing and
yeah.
all those guys.
I didn't want to get drafted by them.
Really?
No, it was looking like that I was going to get drafted in between 18 and 24, and the New York Knicks were right there at pick number 20. I wanted to go to Phoenix because that's where my uncle played,
sure, yeah.
and because the weather is nice out there. I was like, I'd rather pick Phoenix than Boston and Detroit, New York. And also, I didn't want to go to New York because I thought those guys would kill me. I mean, I saw, you know, Xavier McDaniel, Charles Oakley, Anthony Mason, Patrick Ewing, Charles Smith. Those guys just looked so mean and so big and so strong. I just didn't feel like that I would fit in with those guys. I couldn't have gone to a better place. I loved it. Coach Riley was absolutely fantastic. He was an extension of Coach Smith. And the guys on the team, I couldn't have played for a better group of players and pros. I mean, just to think, coming in as a rookie, and I was the only rookie playing with Doc Rivers, Greg Anthony, John Starks, Derek Harper, Rolando Blackman, and then all those big guys, Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason and Patrick Ewing, guys that were successful at that level because of their hard work and their dedication and what they did on and off the court, I couldn't have gone to a better team. They were the best teammates that I ever had. Now, practices were tough. There were fights almost every day in practice, which was a lot different than here at Carolina. But out there when I, you know, it was so funny, and my children have asked me this. They said, have you ever gotten in a fight? And I was like, no. I never got in a fight on the floor, but I did send Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley and those guys to go get some guys. And so sometimes they would set a hard screen on me, and they were like, Hubert, did that guy hurt you on that screen? I go, Charles, I'm telling you, that guy, that was a cheap shot. Next time down the floor, bam, we get an elbow right there in the chest. And, I mean, they really took care of me. And I loved playing with the New York Knicks, and I loved playing with all those players. And I'm so happy for Patrick Ewing getting a chance to be the head coach at Georgetown University. I think he's going to do a fantastic job.
Is Oakley as tough as everybody always said he was?
Yes and no. He is on the court, and then once he leaves the court, he's a teddy bear. He really is.
Right.
I mean, he is I mean, just a teddy bear off the court. Just cares for his teammates. We after practice, we used to go and play ping pong all the time. I mean, he is the best teammate that you can ever have. But once he crossed that line on the floor, it's business. And if you're not on his team, you're the enemy. And he's going to show you that the way that he plays and how hard he plays. He was one of the best teammates that I've ever had.
Do you guys have anybody like that on this team? I mean, do you have anybody that you kind of see flip a switch and become a different guy, or has there been in the last couple of years?
I think Joel does. I think Joel has a little mean streak in him. Mm-hmm. I love that toughness. I know the Knicks, we were considered somewhat so to be not like the bad boys, but it was a different era. I mean, you could hand check at that time. I mean, even in fights, you would get ejected from the game, but you wouldn't get suspended any more games. I mean, right. it was pretty live action back then. But I don't think we have anybody like Charles Oakley or Anthony Mason, somebody that – because I felt like a lot of times we had already won before even the jump ball. I mean, people just saw us come through the gym, and we kind of intimidated them by how hard we played. And I don't think we do that. But I think Joel is somebody that when he crosses the line, whether it's just shoot around, pick up, a real game, he's always ready to compete.
What? You have this smile on your face. I didn't know.
I'm trying to imagine the New York Knicks locker room, and there's Anthony Mason and Xavier McDaniel, and then there's Hubert over in the corner trying to get his hair looking like a cloud.
No. I stopped that when I got to New York.
No. Like, okay.
I told you it started late sophomore year and ended late senior year. Like, I did not bring that to New York. No. It was a straight-up fade when I was in New York.
Whatever you'd like it to be, Mr. McDaniel.
Oh, my goodness.
Adam, do you have something else for Hubert?
Who's the best shooter you ever saw? Present company excluded, so not Jones.
No.
I'm more of a big guy. I like to bang. I like to bang around down low. I can rebound now.
So you're an undersized four.
That's a nice way to put it.
There's no market for you in the NBA now.
There's no market.
If you're
for
a
me
stretch
anyway.
Five, then there's a market for you. Okay.
I'm an unstretched one.
A stretch five. Have you ever thought you would hear that now? When we were out in the Final Four, I took two of my kids, Elijah and Micah, over to see the Phoenix Suns. They played the Houston Rockets. I think it was Sunday, the night before we won the national championship, and it was I can't remember his name. But he was a five man on Phoenix's team. All he did was shoot threes. He was a stretch five. I thought I would never see that. A stretch five.
Yeah.
He was like 7'1". All he was doing is picking and popping. I was like, what in the world?
Nobody needs rebounds anymore.
No, it's threes. But he's not the best shooter I've ever seen. The best shooter I've ever seen was my uncle, Walter Davis. The other best shooter, Dale Ellis. Dale Curry. Ray Allen, Reggie Miller, but I really think the best one was my uncle and Dale Curry. Those two were absolutely fantastic.
What do you do now to try to help guys improve their shot? Like, how do you work with guys on their shot if you feel like there needs to be improvement?
Well, I mean, I work with them in terms of their form, and I always talk about, you know, you've got to shoot, you know, the right way, the correct way, the same way every time. I think the thing that I really try to teach them, I don't know if I do a successful job at it, but I try to teach them how hard you have to work just to give yourself a chance to be the best shooter that you can be. I just, for me, from my background, it's always been I've had to work hard. I didn't have the length of Justin Jackson. I didn't have the athleticism of Theo Pinson. So I had to work at it. And so I think a lot of these guys that come here to Carolina, they're so gifted with, you know, athletically, they're so gifted with their height. They haven't understood how hard you have to work to be the best that you can be. Because I always tell them, I said, you know, at some point, whether it's high school, college, or the NBA, you're going to reach a level where everybody can do the same thing that you can do. And so once you get to that point, what's going to differentiate you between the other player? And it's going to be your how relentless you are on working on your craft on a day-to-day basis. And so I think the thing that I tried most to give them is how much time you've got to spend in the gym on your shot. It just doesn't work shooting 100 shots after practice. I mean, you have to devote yourself to becoming a better shooter. And I think that's one of the things that I really try to get the guys to understand is that you have to spend a lot of time in the gym to be the best that you can be.
Hubert Davis joining us here on the Carolina Insider. We've kept Hubert almost 45 minutes, so we'll just maybe slide in one or two more questions.
No, it's fine. That's fine. I won't eat lunch today. That's cool. It's okay.
His lunch is actually sitting in his office right now.
Are you saying that I need to lose weight?
No, you could have brought it in with you. We could have. Adam, did you have something right then? Like you were going
to
ask something.
If we took you out to the Smith Center right now and you shot 100 threes, how many would you make?
I don't know. I don't shoot anymore. I don't.
But you can just do it.
I mean, don't know. I don't shoot. I just don't. I can't remember the last time I played 5-on-5. When I go out on the court, I never shoot the basketball. So I don't know how many I can make. Out of 100, how many do you think I can make?
I personally think you can make like 95 because I think you can do anything.
95?
That's a little high.
If I can make 95, I'm telling Coach Williams I'm out. I'm going to Summer League.
Yeah, that's
go
right.
Get me some of that cash. They're not paying me enough here.
Start dialing. Hey, hello, Houston Rockets. This is Hubert Davis.
You might remember me. My hair looks like a cloud.
My goodness.
Does anybody need a stretch 5?
undersized 2. Okay.
So gotcha. You said you had to work at shooting. But here, you always look like a natural. So do you remember when you kind of crossed over from I'm really having to grind on this to – okay, this has become muscle memory and it feels natural?
Well, I mean, not just shooting, worked on everything. I think there's always, for me, I'm always trying to figure out how can I get an edge on you. And so when I look at, say if I was coming on this team, okay, yeah, I don't have the athleticism as Theo. I don't have the length of Justin. Like, how can I compete against those guys? And so how can I level the playing field? And so what I had to do was I had to make everything else stronger than those other guys. Okay, yeah, I can't get to 6'8". I can't jump out of the gym. But guess what? I can shoot better than you. My fundamentals, my footwork is better than you. My ball handling is better than you. My will and my want-to is better than you. And now that gap closes, and for some people, it surpasses them. And so that's what I'm talking about. I just believe in that effort and that day-to-day grind that some of these guys don't understand because they're so gifted athletically. But I did. I worked really, really hard on my shot. You know, one of the things that even my children, they laugh at and they still don't believe, I only made 4 3-pointers in high school. That's it.
Your whole high school career?
Whole high school career. 4. Because I just wasn't strong enough. My form was all messed up when I came out to the 3-point line, so I just stayed mid-range. So I made 4. All throughout high school, and then my freshman year here, I don't know what I shot from 3. It wasn't very good. It's just something that I just wasn't used to. And so between my sophomore and junior year, I really worked hard on getting into the weight room, adding more strength, and extending my range. And then that's when I started feeling really, really comfortable from 3-point range.
And we really will let you get to your lunch because I know you're hungry.
You said that 9 questions ago.
It's right. About a half hour.
No,
it's actually your dinner.
We'll get you out on this. So we're lucky enough to get to go to the basketball banquet at the end of the year and hear you guys speak. And almost every guy, when they're talking about the coaching staff, when they talk about you, they talk about kind of the being an ear off the court, and a lot of them talk about a relationship with God and how you help them with that. I'd just be interested in how you approach that off the court relationship with the guys compared to just when you're trying to help them be better basketball players.
Well, I mean, it goes back to I learned this from Coach Smith and Coach Guthridge. I don't think you can coach somebody if you don't know them. If my only interaction with the guys is the 2.5 hours out there on the floor, I can't be the best coach that I can be, and I don't think they can be the best player that they can be. You know, if whatever I'm saying to the guys, if they know where I'm coming from and they know how much I care and I love about them, they can take whatever criticism or anything that I'm saying to them a lot better. And so if I know the guys, then I know what to say to them. If I know the guys, I know what I can't say to them. If I know the guys, I know how to coach them and how to motivate them. And so that's what Coach Smith and Coach Guthridge did with us. They like invested in us as a person. And so with the guys, that's what I do. I spend a lot of time with them apart from basketball. When we go out to lunch or have them over to the house, we don't talk anything about basketball. When they come over to the house, I ask them to bring over their girlfriends so they can get vetted by my wife. But I just let's forget about basketball. We can worry about basketball another time. Like, who are you? What are you about? Where'd you come from? Who are your friends? Talk to me about your family. And to me, the only way that I know how to coach is knowing them as a person. And the only way that they can play for any one of us is if they know us as a person, not as Coach Davis. I want them to know me as Hubert. And so when we're having a conversation, whether it's off the court or on the court, it's just a regular conversation by two people that care for each other. And so that's the way that I feel like you have to coach.
Okay, so I guess we have to let you go eat your sandwich now, Hubert.
It's not a sandwich. Beef bulgogi from Lucha Tigre. Have you ever been there before?
Whoa.
I don't know what
beef bulgogi is?
No, what is that?
It's just it's a different type of meat on rice. It's delicious. Have you ever gone to Lucha Tigre?
I have not.
It's right by – it's not Foster's anymore. It's what is it?
Yeah. I know where you're talking
Martin
about.
Luther King Boulevard?
Yeah.
Right over there. You've never been there?
What a new sponsor of the podcast, man.
That you're talking about right
it's
now?
It's like a Korean-Mexican flair twist.
Oh.
It's unbelievable. You're going to go there today,
Adam,
aren't you?
It's a Korean-Mexican flair twist.
Yeah, why wouldn't you combine those two?
Fusion, things? Asian fusion. Yeah. It's delicious.
I can just sit tonight, Hubert. Adam's going to be in front of the mirror getting his hair just right, getting the puff up, and then going to Lucha Tigre for dinner. It's all happening tonight.
I can't leave the house until it looks like a cloud.
The next time we win a national championship, I'm not going to grow the beard. I'm going to grow the poof.
Oh, that'd
be awesome.
Okay.
There we are.
We're going to bring back the poof.
Who spent more time in front of the mirror, you or Rick Fox?
Rick didn't have to spend any time in front of the camera.
He just rolled out of
bed. He woke up and he was like a model.
Got to go to my GQ shoot.
I was like, my goodness.
Hubert, we really do appreciate you hanging out with us. I hope we can do this again. We can do this again maybe later in the summer or sometime in the future as well. We really
tomorrow.
Enjoy you. Yeah, we really enjoy you hanging out with us. Thank you
later
so much.
Today.
No, I appreciate it. Hopefully not around lunchtime. So.
Man, that was fun with Hubert Davis. Really appreciate Hubert's time. Never easy to just carve out 45 minutes, so we appreciate him giving us the time. And Adam, as we knew it would be, a spectacular interview, and Hubert Davis is awesome.
Not because of the questions, but because of Hubert
Davis. Yes, that's what I meant. Yes, his responses.
Yeah, I mean, as we possibly mentioned during the thing, he's one of my favorites and always has been from the time he was a player here because, and he referenced this, and most people probably know the story, but obviously he's Walter Davis's nephew, and so for that reason, he got some recruiting attention from North Carolina, but Dean Smith went to him and said, you're not going to play here. So you will totally understand if you want to go somewhere else and
sure.
You can play a lot and you're good enough to play elsewhere, but just probably not in North Carolina. But he came anyway and became, in my opinion, the best shooter Carolina's ever had. But if you're going to have that conversation, he's in every conversation.
Certainly
about
in the
it.
Conversation, yes.
Yeah. You can't have the conversation without him. And then went on to a long NBA career and has made himself a very good coach.
Mm-hmm. I think he embodies Carolina basketball maybe as much as any individual. Like, I mean, just kind of the whole – I'm not saying he's the best player. I'm just saying he just the whole thing of it, the family aspect of it, the love of Carolina, the love of Coach Smith. And you referenced this in one of the questions. I mean, he really is a unique bridge kind of between – many different eras of Carolina basketball with his uncle playing and being a tremendous player in the 70s and then playing with Coach Smith in the 80s and 90s and now coaching with Coach Williams. I mean, it Carolina basketball is an enormous part of him, and he is an enormous part of Carolina basketball.
I thought it was so interesting that one of the things, I guess, that most surprises him about today's player is that they don't appreciate tradition. And you could tell it bugged him.
Yeah.
Like, these whippersnappers, they don't like it as much as I do. Like, he was mad. And that's what I would expect Hubert Davis to say.
Yep.
Because he gets it.
That was good. I enjoyed that.
One of my favorite Hubert Davis stories ever. Let me think about the right way to tell this story. So it was in the 2003-05 range, and some guys were playing pickup at the Smith Center. And there was a member of the current Tar Heels at that time, 2003-05, who was running his mouth to Hubert Davis, which is exactly what you would have expected this individual to do. At this point, this was 10-year NBA veteran Hubert Davis.
Yeah, sure.
And one of Carolina's all-time best three-point shooters, like, Hubert Davis deserved much more than what he was getting from this person, but that's exactly what I'd expect from this person. So they're going back and forth, running their mouth. This guy gets off a couple really profane rants, and you remember Jonathan Holmes, who played point guard here? He was sitting right there beside me, and he said, look at those two guys, this current guy who was on the current team and Hubert Davis. He said, that current guy is a million times more physically talented than Hubert Davis. He said, but Hubert Davis will be in the NBA as long as he wants to be, forever. And that other guy will be out of the league in 3 years. Nailed it.
Wise words from John Holmes.
Yeah, he nailed it. And that's exactly right, because Hubert Davis could find a team for as long as he wanted to play because of who he is. And he could fit in with the Knicks, or he could go fit in with the Michael Jordan Washington Wizards, or anybody in between. And not to mention, also, he could play.
Yep. Wow, John Holmes. Wise words.
Yeah.
Young man. Anything else about Hubert Davis other than he was awesome?
I think he was a very interesting one to talk to for the book, and he had some really good stories about it. And he touched on scouting Kentucky that second time a little bit, and he kind of lightly mentioned, like, I told the guys Malik Monk had zero rebounds. It got emphasized a little more than that, and with a little harder edge.
Sure.
That Malik Monk had gone out and scored 47 and done absolutely nothing else, and no one did anything about it. And I think that's a little bit of almost kind of the NBA mindset of, like, you let this guy do this to you, and you did nothing. And I think they played with that edge.
Yeah, I was going to say, now that you have that background on it, I think, seeing what happened during the game, and particularly with Justin Jackson. And was it Monk who Jackson got in his ear after that one basket? So, I mean, that makes a little more. I mean, it just kind of puts those puzzle pieces together a little bit more.
Yeah, and I don't know. And it's also interesting to hear him say he's never thought about being a head coach, because that's certainly something people talk about a lot.
I was going to say other people have thought about that a lot, certainly. Right. I think Hubert Davis will be a head coach at some point. If he wants to be. I'll emphasize it that way. And I'm not necessarily saying here. I'm just saying at some point I think he will be a head coach if he wants to be. What do you think?
I think the only reason why he wouldn't is because he loves it here so much. And I think he's one of the very rare ones that if you say, okay, Coach Davis, you can either be the head coach at fill-in-the-blank other place, or you can be an assistant coach here. He's got the life situation where he can afford to say,
sure,
I wouldn't mind staying here, and he loves it here so much.
Yep.
I don't know. I think he might consider that better than being the head coach somewhere else.
That's a good point. But it kind of depends on where it is. That's a good point. I mean, he's probably not going to Fairleigh Dickinson or something to be the head coach.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so, no.
All right, good times. Wow, I had a guest. First, it's been a while.
Yeah.
So we had to bring the heat.
Yeah, right into the Pod World headquarters.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we'll be back soon. Gosh, it's June. What's happening?
Summer.
Thanks for being with us here on the Carolina Insider.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.